We're continuing this morning in our study of the Christian home. We've looked at, thus far, the roles of the husband and the wife, and today we're looking at the roles of the children. Now, some of you don't have children in the home anymore. Some of you are empty nesters, as it were. Some of your children now have children, so if you're grandparents with no children in the home, you can still have an influence. In fact, sometimes the influence of the grandparents is greater or at least some degree there of influence to the children of the, you know, the grandchildren. So these are things that even grandparents need to know. Most of this will be review, I suppose. Those of us who've been in church for any time will recognize and understand these things. Those of you who are children need to recognize your role. If you're still at home, if your parents are still feeding you and caring for you, if you're not on your own, if you have not left and cleft, if you're not leaving and cleaving, as it were, to another person, and if you've not established your own home yet, well, then you are still under the authority, the responsibility of your parents, and so these are things that you need to know as well. So I think anybody, whether you're a parent or grandparent or child, these are things that we need to learn and understand. These are things that are biblical that we probably know, but we also need to affirm them from time to time. And since we are talking about the family matters in our summer sermon series, I think it's well for us once again to touch on these things. Children, when it comes to their responsibilities, have it fairly simple because their roles are really only three. They have three main things that they are supposed to do. Kids are expected to obey and honor their parents and learn. And so those are the three pretty simple basic categories for them. It's unfortunate that in our world, children often do none of these, or at least they do none of them very well. They don't honor and obey their parents, and oftentimes they're reluctant to learn. Sometimes parents don't require that their children obey and honor them, and they don't expect them to learn very much either. Sometimes schools don't do a good job at teaching children to learn or insisting that they learn. Many children in our world today are failing to fulfill God's basic commands or instructions to them. Obey your parents, honor your parents, and learn. Sometimes children unfortunately grow up in environments that parents are dishonorable people. I'm aware of situations and I've heard certain stories about children growing up in situations or in atmospheres where the parents are simply dishonorable people. And then, of course, the kids are brought up in that kind of an atmosphere, and so the kids are unruly, they're disrespectful, and they don't learn much. They are very poorly educated, primarily because that's the kind of atmosphere in which they were raised. And so I suppose in those situations, we really don't have a right to expect a whole lot more than what we see in the parents. Well, obviously, Christian homes should be different. We might expect that sort of thing in the unsaved world, but we don't expect it from children brought up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. The responsibility for Christian parents is to raise their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, and if they are raised in that kind of environment, well, we wouldn't expect the children to be behaving like children raised in an unsaved family. No child, of course, is going to be perfect, and no family is perfect, that's for sure. But we would expect children raised in a Christian home to know and try to fulfill the basic expectations, the basic roles that God has given to children. We would hope that the parents understand that, and we would hope that the children would recognize that that is their responsibility as well. Parents should insist that children fulfill these roles. Children are not going to probably accept these roles naturally or automatically. They need to be trained. And that's one of the responsibilities of parents, is to train their children to accept these roles and to seek to fulfill them. So let's look at these responsibilities in a little more clarity and depth. First of all, children must obey their parents. We all know Ephesians 6:1. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Likewise, it's basically repeated in Colossians 3:20. Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing unto the Lord. The Bible takes this command for children to obey their parents very seriously. You're probably aware that in the Old Testament, there was a very serious punishment for those children who were rebellious and stubborn and would not obey their parents. What could the parents do if they had a child who was stubborn and rebellious and would not obey? They could bring him to the elders of the land and they would stone him. I'm not aware of any times that that actually happened, but that is part of the Old Testament law. Now, I'm not advocating that we stone our children today. If you have a stubborn and rebellious child, there are other ways of dealing with it than stoning. But I do recommend that we take disobedience seriously, that we expect the children to obey, and we take serious and significant steps if the children don't obey. And regarding obedience, I think parents should try to teach their children obedience in several ways. First of all, teach children to obey quickly. Teach your child to obey right away. Children should understand that their parents expect them to obey or begin the obedience process as soon as they issue the command. They should begin to work on that task right away, or at least they should prepare to do so. They should be moving in that direction. As soon as the command is issued by one of the parents, the children need to recognize, okay, now it's my responsibility to begin moving in this direction of obeying this command. Children often don't want to obey. That may be a revelation, a shock to you, to learn that children often don't want to obey. And they use various methods to postpone obedience. They use delay tactics in an effort to avoid obeying the commands and really not doing what they'd rather not do. And so parents should teach children that anything other than a first-time obedience is disobedience. Slow to obey is disobey. So this is maybe something that you could train your children to recognize. Slow to obey is the same thing as disobey. Parents should not need to state the command over and over again. Parents should not need to try to explain or try to convince or try to beg the child. I think I mentioned it before one other time that I was in the city park, I think it was last summer, maybe it was the summer before, and there was various children playing on the swings. I think I had my kids there, they were playing on the swings, and this one child was swinging back and forth, having a good time, and somebody, an adult, I take it was the child's parent, came and said, I forget the name of the child, but let's just say it was Billy or Johnny or something, okay, Billy, it's time to go, let's go, and this child just keeps on swinging. Okay, we're going to go have some lunch now. It's lunchtime, Billy. Come on, let's go. The child just looks at the parent and just keeps on swinging. Now listen, Grandma and Grandpa are going to be there. We have some ice cream. We have some watermelon. Wouldn't you like to come? And, you know, we're going to eat now. It's time to go. The child just keeps swinging. Okay, Billy, well, listen, we're leaving. We're leaving now, Billy, and you're just going to be left behind. Child just sits there, swings away, having a good time. Well, finally, that individual left, and then another child comes, or another parent, or another adult at least comes. Maybe it was the grandpa or something like that. Okay, Billy, now it's time to go. We really need to go. You know, we're going to go get some ice cream. Wouldn't you like to come and get some ice cream? The child sort of hems and haws about it and finally gets off the swing and goes. Well, I'm just the kind of person who would say to that, I think I said to the individual, or maybe I was thinking it. I don't remember if I said it or if I just thought it. I was going to say, if I had the chance, I would have said to the mother when she came originally, I would have said, you are the mother. Enforce your command. Go and grab that child by the hand. You don't have to be violent about it, but you go and take that child with you. You don't beg, you don't plead, you don't, you know, try to pay the child off. You insist that the child does what you command it to do. And yet today, and we see it, probably you see it just as much as I do, parents who act as if the child is in charge and it's a great difficulty to get that child, the little, whatever, 5-year-old kid to do what this whatever, 200-pound adult wants the child to do, the child is in charge. And obviously that's not the way to lead a child or to raise the child. Parents should state the command and then enforce the command. Don't allow the child to delay or disobey. Now you may allow a child to appeal or to try to protest even a command, but only if he displays a submissive, respectful attitude. In other words, okay, the child says, well, I know you want me to do this, but I can't right now, or here's the reasons that I don't want to, or there's some explanation that the child could give very respectfully, very honorably, and you could then take that into account. But it's generally best to explain your reasons for a particular instruction after the child has obeyed. Okay, I have a reason that I'm calling you to do this. I'm not interested in your explanations right now. I'll explain it maybe later, but right now I need you to do this, and I don't need you to backtalk. I don't need you to question why. I don't need you to delay. I need you to do it right now. And so don't argue with the child. You simply demand that he or she obeys first. What are you teaching your child if you allow them to regularly ignore your commands? What are you teaching the child if you allow them to delay or act as if they don't hear you? Well, you're teaching that the child is in charge, that the child has the right to ignore his parents. And I don't think you want to teach that. Unfortunately, many parents today train their children to delay obedience by repeating those commands over and over again. They demand obedience only after they've given the command multiple times. And the more that you delay obedience or allow the obedience to be delayed, the more you're reinforcing the idea that delay is okay. I'm not expecting the child to obey right away. I'm expecting the child to obey after I've issued the command five times. And what often happens is the stress level then begins to rise. Come on, Johnny, let's do this. Come on, Johnny. Johnny, now I'm serious. Johnny Peter Anderson, you better get your tail over here right away. So, you know, it's command 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And the children are generally not stupid. They recognize, okay, I don't really have to obey until my mom or dad gets really mad. And if they use my middle name, then I know that I have to obey then. But I really don't have to obey until that happens. Until I get the promise of an ice cream cone, I really don't have to obey. Until I get the threat of a paddling, I really don't have to obey. So if you do that enough, children are not stupid. They're going to pick up that I really don't have to obey until just before getting into trouble. If the child cannot obey right away, then at least he should respond in some way. I'm coming. I'm on my way. I just have to finish this, and then I'll get to it. I can't do it right now, but I'll do it here in just a second. I just need to finish what I'm doing. Or is it okay if I finish what I'm doing first and then do this? Okay, so at least I know that the child heard the command. He's planning to do it, and he will do it eventually as soon as, you know, just in a minute or two when he finishes up what he's doing. Okay, I think that's reasonable as long as we know that he's heard the command and he plans to do what you've commanded him to do. If the child refuses to obey right away, then the parents impose consequences right away. The child should know that if he or she does not obey quickly, punishment will follow quickly. It doesn't have to be drastic, dramatic punishment, but it should be something that gets your child's attention and helps the child to realize that you expect them to obey right away. Somebody said, the most subtle form of passive rebellion is to wait to obey until just before getting into trouble. A child considers that it is a victory of his own will over the will of his parents when he doesn't obey until he himself decides to do so. So this is a form, I would agree that this is a form of rebellion. It is a form of sort of passive disobedience. I will obey when I'm good and ready to. I'm willing to obey just before you punish me. So that essentially is putting the ball in the child's court and saying, I'm in control here. I'm going to do what I want to do. And I will obey when I feel like it. We need to teach our children that we expect them to obey when we decide they need to obey, not when they decide to do so. Parents must maintain their authority over their children. When you tolerate delayed obedience, you're telling your child that he or she is the authority. And so don't allow your child to essentially, what they're doing is to manipulate you. They are manipulating their parents by delayed obedience. So teach your child to obey right away. Secondly, teach your child to obey completely. So slow to obey is disobey, and partial obedience is disobedience. Those are two themes that you might want to drill into the heads of your kids. Slow to obey is disobey. Partial obedience is disobedience. Parents need to be clear and thorough in their instructions so there's no misunderstanding or confusion on the child's part. Now, for a little child especially, we all probably know that we need to get down sometimes on their eye level. You know, look me in the eyes, Johnny. I'm telling you what to do. Here's the thing to do, okay? Do you understand it? Oh, yes, Mommy. Yes, Daddy. Now, tell me what I want you to do. I forgot. Okay, so I'm going to give you the instructions again. You know, sometimes we have to do this with 3 or 4-year-olds. We recognize that that's what we have to do. It's common that children begin a task and fail to finish. The child begins and then gets quickly distracted. We have one of these in our home right now, our 6-year-old. She's willing to start the job quickly, but then oftentimes she gets distracted. Other things, I don't know if you remember what it's like being a 6-year-old, you're easily distracted. And so to expect a 6-year-old or a 5 or a 4 or a 3-year-old to start a job and see it through to its completion, you know, that's quite a large and a high expectation. Sometimes they can do that. Sometimes not. Young children especially have a hard time staying on task. adults sometimes have a hard time staying on task. I was doing various things around the house yesterday, and I just went from one thing to the next, and then I remembered, oh, wait, I got to go and finish this, and then I started this. Oh, wait, I got to go finish this. You know, all of us, I think, or at least I, still have a hard time staying on task from time to time. So think about a 4 or 5-year-old. A child needs to learn how to do a task fully without becoming distracted. And parents help that child through the process by insisting that the child finish the job. Now, as I mentioned, is it reasonable to expect a 3-year-old to complete a task without becoming distracted? Probably not. But as the child grows, as the child matures, then as we help that child through the process of starting a task and finishing it and, you know, completing the job, then obviously the child should develop that ability. Now, why would the child be reluctant to complete a task? What is it that makes people reluctant to finish the job? Well, in some cases, as I said, children are simply not mature enough to see a task through. They need help with that. But in other cases, failure to complete a job is a subtle form of rebellion. Children assert their own wills over the will of the parent by partially obeying, by partially following instructions, by starting a task and not finishing it. And oftentimes, what do the parents do if the child does not finish the task? Well, I'll just come and clean this up. I mean, Johnny didn't finish his job, but somebody's got to do it, and you know, it needs to be done, so I'll just come and finish the job that Johnny was supposed to do. Instead of enforcing the command and insisting that Johnny finish his task, often the parents come and take care of that for him. Well, is that really in the benefit of little Johnny who never learns how to finish a job? It's probably not a good idea. So children need to understand that the parents expect him or her to finish the job. At our house, we listen to Patch the Pirate songs, and one of those great character-enhancing songs is Finish the Job. Finish the job, finish the job, get it done. Finish the job, then have fun. When you have a job to do, never quit until you're through. Finish the job, get it done. So that's a good song to play at your home if your kids are having a hard time finishing the task. Teach your kids that you expect them to obey quickly and completely. If they have legitimate problems, if they have legitimate questions, that's okay. We can deal with the questions and the problems that they might have. If there's a good reason that the child can't finish the job or finish it right away, we can understand that. But the parents should not allow delaying tactics to work. If a child refuses to act quickly and completely for no good reason, then I think there's got to be consequences for that, some form of punishment. And it doesn't have to be a big, hairy deal, but something that the child recognizes that if I don't do this job, there will be consequences. And so parents have to be watching over that, be supervising their child to make sure that it happens. And then thirdly, teach the child to obey submissively, that is, with a good attitude. Our goal as parents is not merely to change the child's behavior, but to change the child's heart. We want to install good character in the child, the kind of character that does the right thing because it's the right thing to do. They have honor and esteem for their parents, and they want to honor their parents by filling or fulfilling the job. If the child is rebellious, he must learn that it does not pay to rebel against parental authority. Part of the submissive spirit is doing a job without complaining or talking back. Once you've assigned the job, don't allow the child to whine or gripe about it. Insist that the child does the job with a good attitude and without complaint. I remember, for whatever reason, it sticks in my head, a situation that happened to me when I was a little kid. I was probably 8 or 10 years old. And I think my mom told me to move a pile of leaves from just right behind our house to a place up the hill. I think we were burning the leaves up there or something, so I needed to move this rather small pile of leaves, and I simply didn't want to do it. I don't remember what I was doing, if I were maybe watching TV or playing or who knows what, but I wasn't doing anything important, and my mom said, take the wheelbarrow out there and go move this pile of leaves. And frankly, I probably could have done it in, you know, 10 or 15 minutes had I simply worked at it, but I just had a bad attitude. I did not want to do it. So I went to the back, and I thought to myself, I'll show my mom. I knew that she was kind of watching out the back window. So I'll show her. I'll do this job as slowly as I can. So instead of filling the wheelbarrow, I started taking little handful of leaves, one at a time. And I took that little handful as mad as I could, and I marched up the hill, and I put it where it was going to be burnt, and I marched back down the hill, and I got another pile, a little handful of leaves, and I marched up there. And you know, I did that probably 3 or 4 times, and then I realized, this is really stupid. I'm wasting all this energy, and I'm taking all this time, and I'm not even hurting my mom. My mom doesn't even care that I'm expending all this energy for nothing. And so, you know, that's a little 8 or 10-year-old kid, that's how he thinks. I'm going to really hurt my mom by doing this stupid thing. So finally, I got out the rake, and I raked it all up, put it in the wheelbarrow, and took it up there. And like I said, 10 minutes later, I'm done. So this is the kind of thinking, I think, that goes through the mind of a little child. And if one is delaying, or one is complaining, or one is having this bad attitude about something, well, obviously, that's a subtle form of rebellion. And so the heart of the child is just as sinful as the heart of any adult. One of the difficult tasks of parenting is trying to mold our children so that they have a good attitude about obeying commands. Or at least they're not rebellious. At least they can do a task without complaining and griping and whining about it. Don't allow the child to whine and complain and gripe, at least audibly. They might be doing it in their mind, but don't allow that if they're speaking that way. And parents should impose significant consequences if the child refuses to do the job. Make the child do the job even if he's unwilling. Even if he does have a bad attitude, enforce your command. Make him do that job. Life is full of doing tasks that we'd rather not do. And part of maturity is the ability to do a job that you, frankly, would rather not do. And so children need to learn that from a very young age. They can do the task, they can get through it, they can do it without whining and complaining and griping about it, and get on to other things. So don't reward rebellion or a bad attitude by allowing the child to avoid the job. Make the child do the job. I mean, as long as it's a reasonable task that they could do, and they simply don't want to do it because they have a bad attitude, well, I would enforce the command, make the child do the job, have him learn that lesson. Here's another quote that I think is very good. At whatever point a child chooses to rebel, his parents must utilize sufficient force to put down the revolt immediately. Parents can neither avoid the problem of a child's rebellion nor attempt to negotiate with it. Rebellion must be conquered. I think that's especially true for young children, the toddlers and going up into the young ages. You need to treat rebellion in that child very severely, with great emphasis, so that the child recognizes very early on that he must not rebel against his parents. It should go without saying that children need not submit to sinful or unreasonable commands. Ephesians, remember, it says, children, obey your parents in the Lord. So that suggests that the command that the parent's giving is according to godly wisdom. It's not violating biblical commands. Of course, the Bible says we ought to obey God rather than man. And so if the parents ever give a command that is sinful or that is not in keeping with biblical standards, well, obviously the children are not obligated to obey. But in a Christian home, that frankly should never happen. It should never be the case where a parent would issue a command that would be sinful or unbiblical. So training your children to obey is crucial to both their physical and spiritual well-being. If the children don't learn to obey their parents, it's probably unlikely that they'll learn to obey other authorities, employers, government officials, God himself. If they don't see the value of obeying parents and having respect for parents, well, they probably won't obey others either. Obedience is not natural. And so parents must teach the children these skills and characteristics. This is what you try to instill within your children, is this obedient attitude. Now, of course, we recognize that complete obedience is not natural, nor is it very common, unfortunately, within little sinners like we have as children. People oftentimes don't want to obey, and so we don't have unreasonable expectations. We can't think that our children are going to be little angels all the time. More likely, they're little fallen angels most of the time, and we recognize that they're sinners just like we are, and they don't want to obey any more than we do sometimes. So we don't have higher expectations that are unreasonable. Okay, so that's obey. That's the first one. The second one is children must honor their parents. Ephesians 6, 1 through 3, I think a passage that is well known. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. Okay, so honor your father and mother. The Bible contains several commands directing children to honor their parents. Jesus repeated that command in the Gospels in the New Testament. So we have on good evidence, there's good support for this idea that children must obey their parents. And honor is a little bit different than obedience. You can obey without honor. Any of us can obey a command, even if we don't honor the people who issued the command. But if we have honor for that individual, we are going to obey naturally, or that is something that will come along as a result. We can honor somebody by obeying them. Honor prohibits rebellion and disrespect. Children who honor their parents are not defiant and belligerent toward them. In fact, the Old Testament contains severe punishments for those who would disrespect their parents. Just like that disobedient and stubborn and rebellious child would be stoned, so likewise, striking or cursing one's parents was a capital crime punishable by death. Proverbs 30, verse 17 says, "The eye that mocks his father and scorns obedience to his mother, the ravens of the valley will pick it out, and the young eagles will eat it." Now, why would a vulture or an eagle pick out and eat the eye of an individual? It's because that individual is dead. He's a decomposing corpse. He's been stoned to death because of his disobedient, rebellious, disrespectful attitude toward his parents. So, again, the Old Testament had rather severe consequences for rebellion and dishonor. Now, why would a child dishonor his parents? Well, again, remember that Paul says, "Fathers, provoke not your children to wrath." And so one reason that a child might behave dishonorably is that the parents are provoking them to wrath. The word provoke means to rouse to anger, to exasperate, or to enrage. A child could be enraged by the behavior of his parents. So there are several possibilities that various writers have suggested that would cause a child to be provoked to wrath. Here's a list that I compiled. By unjust demands, unreasonable severity, unremitting criticism, fault-finding, being neglectful or inconsistent, through overprotection, showing favoritism, discouragement, neglect, unfair comparison or physical or verbal abuse, by excessively severe discipline, unreasonably harsh demands, abuse of authority, arbitrariness, unfairness, constant nagging and condemnation, subjecting a child to humiliation. One writer suggests that Paul is warning against goading their children into a state of perpetual resentment. Well, if your children were in a state of perpetual resentment because of your abuse, do you think that they're going to be treating you honorably? Are they going to respect you? Well, probably not. Is it possible that your child is disobedient because you are provoking the child? That is, you are goading that person to a state of resentment. So that's one thing. If the parents are abusive or somehow not taking care of their children, we might expect the child or the children to dishonor their parents. Another reason might be that the parents themselves are behaving dishonorably. If the parents are living dishonorably, well, then we can probably expect the child to reflect that same characteristic or attitude. Don't be a do as I say, but not as I do kind of parent. There are many parents who are living dishonorable lives. They really don't want the same thing for their children, and so they tell their children what to do or not do, but they're actually doing the kind of things that their parents are telling them not to do. It's like I remember years ago dealing with a family, I think the parents smoked, and I don't know how many times I heard the parents tell the children, "Don't smoke." Well, if your mother or father is holding a cigarette, puffing away, "Now, honey, don't smoke, don't smoke." Well, they're doing it. Why should I not smoke if my parents are smoking? Why should I not behave dishonorably if my parents are dishonorable? So again, we see that reflected in the child. Parents should teach their children to speak respectfully. The father in particular must not allow the child to speak disrespectfully, especially to their mother. I don't know how you respond to that. If a child speaks disrespectfully to its mother, I think the father in particular has to jump on that aggressively and with fervency and not allow that child to speak that way to its mother. I would see disrespect, in fact, as a more serious issue than other forms of disobedience. I would respond to disrespect quite sternly. Parents must not tolerate disrespect from their children, even from the youngest of them. Don't allow the child to speak disrespectfully or allow the child to behave disrespectfully, even from a very young age. Another quote, some forms of disrespect are quite subtle. Tone of voice, facial expression, the rolling of the eyes, stomping the foot, slamming the door. Parents must always respond to disrespect from their children with firm discipline from a very early age. One of the things that really burns my wife or that really gets her attention is physical resistance from a child. For example, if she's taking a child, she wants to direct the child to move this way or come with me, honey, or something like that, and that child goes, no. That will get my wife's attention very quickly. The teacher in her, I think, comes out, and she will not accept that kind of behavior from a child. That is essentially rebellion. It's saying, no, I want my way. I'm going to do it my way. I want things my way. And the parent has the responsibility to train that child to be submissive or compliant to the will of the parents. And so we cannot allow that to stand. That's a punishable offense. If my wife is going to spank a kid because of anything, that would be one of them. So I think in the same way, we respond very severely, as it were, but with robust response to that kind of disrespect. So reinforce to your children that the parents are the authority in the home and that disrespect for authority will not be tolerated. Parents must insist that their children behave respectfully toward them. And then finally, children must learn. We read that passage in Proverbs chapter 1 that talks about, my son, hear the instruction of thy father, forsake not the law of thy mother. Much of the Proverbs is written Solomon to his son or sons. It's an encouragement for the child to do the right thing and to make good decisions. And so we have this repeated throughout the Bible, this idea that children ought to be learning, they ought to be growing, they ought to be pursuing wisdom and instruction. And so parents are responsible to teach their children, and children as well, once I think they reach a certain age, they should have a desire to learn, to grow, to increase in knowledge and wisdom. Young people should pursue knowledge. Parents should instill within their children that wisdom and knowledge are good things. Education is a key to success in many areas of life. It's worth taking the time and effort to seek wisdom, knowledge, and instruction. And even though instruction and education and wisdom can be a difficult thing to pursue, there's a lot of work that's involved in getting that instruction and wisdom. Still, it's worth doing. The benefits outweigh the costs. Kids often think that they only need to learn what's necessary for a career. I sometimes hear that from young people, well, I don't need to learn this stuff. All I plan to be is this. You know, I'm going to be this in my career, and so I need to learn what's necessary for my career, but I really don't need to learn anything beyond that. I would suggest that kids need to learn what's necessary to be a fully functional Christian adult, to live in this world under God's sovereignty and to do what God expects you to do. The child needs to understand the world and the things going on in the world. He needs to understand who God is and what his obligations to God are. I sometimes think in terms of vocation. What do I need to learn to fulfill my vocations? Everybody has about four vocations: family, church, citizen, and employee. So what do I need to know in this world to be a fully functional part of this family? What do I need to learn to be a part of a church? What do I need to learn as a citizen of this country? What do I need to learn to be to have a job, to be an employee? So there's more to life than simply learning what I need to do to have a good job. Obviously, you want to have a good job, but there's a whole lot more to life than simply doing your work. Work is often a big part of life, but it's not all of life. I want to know how to be a Christian father and a husband. I want to learn how to function within the context of the church. I want to know what it means to be a good citizen of the United States. You know, the history, why the United States is going the way that it is, how to understand politics, all that kind of thing. So there's got to be a wider education than merely, here's what you need to know to do a job. That's a good thing to learn how to do your job, but life is much more than that. So how can parents instill a love for learning within the children? How do we convince the children that learning is a good thing? Well, first of all, I'd say lay a spiritual foundation for learning. That is, this is a Christian attitude to have. We need to learn because we need to know about God. The Bible tells us that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. We need to begin a pursuit of knowledge with God and what God has revealed. A relationship with God forms the basis of education. So we begin with a small child. His education ought to begin with a respect and honor for God. Unfortunately, much of what passes for education today begins with the opposite principle. There is no God. Or at least that if there is a God, it really doesn't matter to education. Much of education today is entirely secular. You know, they removed God from the public schools years ago. It was not uncommon to have the Ten Commandments posted in schools 40, 50, 60 years ago. It was not uncommon to begin the day with prayer. But all of that, as far as I know, is gone. It's out of the public school systems. They had lawsuits, and the Supreme Court came up with these rulings to remove God from the public school. So the public school system is designed to be secular. It is designed to have no reference to God whatsoever. And so what then do you get in the public school? You get human ideas without reference to God. You get a morality that has no reference to God. And it's very unfortunate that many people in our public schools today are taught things that are absolutely anti-God and anti-Christian. The most important part of a child's education is the fear of the Lord. That's the beginning of wisdom and knowledge. And so obviously, Christian parents should insist that their children are getting a Christian education in some respect. And I would suggest that that education would include these basic biblical truths, that the child is a unique creation of God. His or her life has meaning and significance because the child bears the image of God. That identity, how do kids get their identity these days? Well, oftentimes it's part of the team that they're on, or a lot of it really comes from internal feeling. That's what our culture is saying today. You identify yourself by however you feel on the inside. Doesn't matter what your biology is. Doesn't matter what your family is. Doesn't matter what nation you belong to. Doesn't matter what team you're on. You just identify yourself by how you feel about yourself. Well, is that a good idea to tell children you can identify by anything you feel on the inside? Do feelings change from time to time? Do they go up and down? Obviously. So Christians identify themselves by our relationship to God and what God tells us, what God says about us. We are made in the image of God. We are not simply the results of blind, random evolution, but that our lives have meaning and purpose and dignity because of our relationship with God. The child is a sinner in need of a Savior. Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. The solution to our sin problem is through Jesus Christ, through repentance of sin and trust in Christ to be saved. Obviously, Christian parents would be pursuing the salvation of their children. The Bible is the Word of God. It contains the wisdom of God. Parents should teach children to honor and to respect the Bible. We ought to be teaching the Bible in our homes, in personal devotions, family devotions. The children should be well educated by the parents regarding the Bible in the home. Christians must be committed to the moral value system. We live in a very licentious culture that is totally against Christian morality today. And so children need to learn in the home the Christian moral value system, and hopefully that they would affirm that for themselves. Parents are responsible to teach their children the truth and to protect them from evil and error. Christian parents should want to instill within their children a Christian worldview. We understand the world through biblical lenses. We recognize that the Word of God is true, and then we understand our world through our comprehension of God and God's revelation. That's a biblical worldview. And I think we would want consistency in our education as well. In other words, I want my child to learn something that would be the same whether I'm teaching it, or somebody in church is teaching it, or someone in school is teaching it. They're not getting conflicting ideas from home, school, and church, that everybody is consistently teaching the same basic ideas. That, I think, would be an ideal. Then do your best to educate your children. How are you going to educate your children? Well, that obviously is the choice of each individual set of parents. Some people advocate homeschool. Others promote private school. I'm the product of a public school education, and I'm well aware of all the problematic things that are being taught in public schools today. And so although each family has to make its own choice, I would certainly encourage parents to put your child in the best place possible, that they would learn the truth and avoid evil and error. Like I said, for some people, homeschool is a good choice. But on the other hand, for some people, homeschool is probably not a good choice. Same thing could be said for private school. Given what's going on in public schools today, I would have to agree with many other pastors in our world that are encouraging and advocating. They are giving the instructions, if possible, for their kids not to attend public school if they can avoid it. Sometimes, of course, that is the only other option. But if I were to make a recommendation, I would urge parents to avoid public school if possible. If the child is at public school, well, the parents are going to have to do a lot of deprogramming and de-indoctrination. The public schools today, I think, are full of indoctrinating in the world's point of view. And if you don't want your child to absorb and adopt that point of view, you're going to have to kind of deprogram that child and deal with a lot of those issues that they're being taught in public school today. Whatever the environment of the education, parents must do their best to make sure that the kids are getting a good education. The ultimate responsibility for this does not lie so much with the children. I mean, what can children do? They're not in control of their own education most of the time. And so parents have to make sure that they instill within that child as good of education as that they can possibly do, whether that's at home or a private school, or there may be some cases where a public school is the only option. But whatever the situation is, the parents are responsible to make sure that their kids are well educated. And if the children are not doing well in school, then the parents should make a fervent attempt to make whatever necessary changes are required for the child to do better. Perhaps some privileges need to be taken away if that child refuses to participate or to achieve at school. Well, maybe there are some consequences of not trying in school and not pursuing a good education. And then finally, provide an example for your children to follow. I think the parents could do much with simply showing by example that they value education and learning. If learning is important to the parents, then it will probably be more important to the children. If education is a high priority, well, then the children will assume that it ought to be a high priority for them as well. Now, when I speak of education, I'm not necessarily saying higher education. For many, many people, a high school education is fine. You can achieve much. In fact, we all are aware that there are people who didn't even complete high school who do very well in our world today. Some people, you know, go on to college because that's necessary for the career field that they've chosen. But college is not a requirement unless you choose to do so. You can do very well with a high school degree, or frankly, even without a high school degree. Education and learning and things don't necessarily have a lot to do with degrees or years of school. People can be well educated outside the normal educational routes. So if college is necessary, if it's something you want to pursue, then that's great. If not, that's fine as well. A person can do perfectly well with or without a college education or whatever kind of further instruction that may be pursued. But parents can help their children by valuing education and expecting their child to learn. And so the roles of the children are fairly simple. Obey, honor, and learn. Those obligations are in place for the child, frankly, until he leaves home, until he begins his own family. He's living at home and the parents are taking care of the individual. Well, that child is bound. He's obligated to obey, honor, and learn. Even after the child leaves the home, he or she should still have respect for his parents. If he wants to have a decent relationship for the rest of his life, that child ought to maintain respect and honor for the parents. These are fairly simple roles, and yet we know that children often have a hard time fulfilling them. We should not expect children to fulfill these roles automatically or naturally or perfectly. Parents need to help their children learn to obey, honor, and learn. In fact, we should demand that children obey, honor, and learn. If children fail to fulfill these basic obligations, well, it may be that the parents simply failed to teach them. So these are the children's roles, and of course the parents play a big role in helping the children to fulfill these roles. To a large degree, if the children obey, honor, and learn, it's because the parents have taught their children to do so. Well, let's close.